I'm Lou Dobbs, and this is the Great America Show. Welcome. Glad to have you with us, and we're watching the radical Marxist left in America come unstuck over that draft opinion rolling back Roe v. Wade by a 5-4 vote. A draft opinion that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, says was leaked, and he's ordered an investigation to find out just who that leaker is. Now, we've learned a few things, haven't we, in these politically charged times? We've learned not to blindly accept the assertions of those in authority. Was it really a leak, or was it purposeful, an ordered reveal to Politico representing a leak? Just who does the leak benefit? Adam Schiff said it doesn't really matter who leaked it. Ooh, that makes us think that it's a little suspicious that it was a liberal, perhaps, a clerk, perhaps a justice, perhaps even the Chief Justice himself. Protesters were in front of the Supreme Court building within a half hour of the so-called leak. Placards and signs held aloft with pro-abortion, anti-court messages blazing their messages of outrage for the TV cameras. Suspiciously quick staging, don't you think? Vice President Kamala Harris's shrieks of how dare they, lampooned and mocked by conservatives and pro-life polls, President Biden less than eloquently saying he gets his rights directly from God, and reporters merely scratching their heads. The Marxist left puppet president more adrift than usual in the media hubbub that ensued, and Senator Schumer capping off the left-wing fit over a high court decision that wouldn't actually end abortions, merely leave it up to each state to legislate regulation of abortion. And yes, in about half the states, perhaps, there would be further limits or outright bans against abortion. We are, after all, a God-fearing nation. Ours is a Judeo-Christian culture, and we are a constitutional republic, a republic that respects states' rights and powers. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, under the 10th Amendment, establishing the principle of states' rights, that the federal government has powers limited by the Constitution, and all other powers are reserved to each state. And clearly, abortion is not a right contained in the Constitution. It's that simple. It's that direct. The Marxist left, of course, disagrees, but they disagree with much. They disagree with the existence of the family, our federalist system of government, and the inconvenience of our Constitution and the rights guaranteed all American citizens. Democrat Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is a radical leftist, to say the least, now campaigning for a third term as representative of the 5th Congressional District in Minnesota. You know her. She's the one who wants to pack the Supreme Court, to scrap the filibuster to assure pro-abortion guarantees, free college education, cancellation of $1.6 trillion in student debt. She seeks as well a Palestinian state, a two-state solution, and has been accused of being an anti-Semite, and the list goes on, all sure to appeal to the far-left constituents of the deep blue 5th District in Minnesota. Seeking the Republican nomination to run against her is former NBA player and civil rights activist Royce White. Royce is a far-right populist, anti-globalist, a conservative Republican, a MAGA Republican, who is eager to win the GOP nomination in a primary race that has him pitted against party favorite Cicely Davis, and he wants to take up the challenge of defeating a Democrat incumbent in a D+24 district. Please welcome to the Great America Show, Royce White. Royce, a pleasure to have you with us to talk with you. I've been reading all about you, and you are a terrific American. And I want to start with what made you decide to run for the U.S. Congress?
Well, thanks for having me on, Lou. I appreciate it. And I'm a fan of your work and the things you've done over the years. I just turned 31 years old in April. I've only been out of high school and an adult now for a decade or so. And I graduated from high school in 2009. And that was obviously the year that we elected Barack Obama. Right. And over the last 10 years, I have come to better understand the greater political landscape, you could say. And my own fight with the NBA helped shape my my understanding and my view about globalism and the attack on American citizenship, the attack on the founding values of this country. And I guess I woke up one day and up was down and down was up. And I understood it to be a crisis of leadership, which I think it is. And the only way forward now, in my opinion, is to restore our national honor and sacred honor. And there are too few and far between candidates, but leaders in general that are willing to say that, let alone move forward and pursue it. So that's why I got involved. And Ilhan Omar is as anti-American as you could possibly get.
She really is, isn't she? And but still, the 5th District, I don't know what the ratio is of Republican to Democrat. And for everybody listening, let me be very clear. This man is a Republican, and he is he has a strong spirit that I think reflects fundamental American values. It's just great to have you on the ticket and have you running against a person who, as you say, is anti-American. It's not that she's un-American. This is anti-American, right. Much like her party. Your judgment about your chances and as you surveyed that district to determine whether or not you could win?
Well, first of all, I'm a firm believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm not shy about my Christian values. And in fact, I woke up one day to find out, you know, which was a shock to me in some sense, that this atheism had become widespread and Christianity had become enemy number one. And when I woke up and realized that, I was like, excuse me. And so, you know, part of my candidacy as well, and the choice of where I started my political journey is a reverence for Jesus Christ, in that he exhibited for humanity the value of self-sacrifice. And it is somewhat self-sacrificial for me to go into the belly of the beast, and CD5 Minneapolis in Minnesota is the belly of the beast of liberal, neoliberal Marxism, right? And that whole far left ideology. We are one of the cultural epicenters of such beliefs. And I have faith in God, and I have faith that if we begin to spread the word, spread the gospel again, and transform hearts and minds with truth instead of becoming Democrats in order to win these elections and win these strongholds, then we can actually gain some ground back in this country. I try and tell people, if we become Democrats to win these traditionally blue strongholds, then we don't really win. We actually lose twice. We lose once in the election on our ideas and values, and then we lose twice in the eternal with God. And that's really what's at stake for me. But I couldn't take the easy route. I couldn't take the route where I went to a more Republican district or even ran in a statewide race that would have a bigger Republican constituency. I had to start in the community that raised me, partially because I do believe that many within our community that have traditionally voted Democrat are only doing so based on mainstream media lies.
Yeah, the lies are many, and they come like water out of a fire hose from the Marxist left Dems. Your community, DC5, CD5, excuse me, that is an interesting subject to me because, as you say, culturally, historically, it is liberal as it can be. And we're seeing national polls, Royce, that show Hispanics, for example, are moving by more than half to the Republican Party. This statistic alone spells doom for the Democrats nationwide in November. And we are seeing people under 45 years of age move by 50%, young people moving to the Republican Party. Is there that kind of, I'll call it strength within the community? I was going to say vulnerability, but let's talk about it as strength, to actually think independently and to make a choice to go to the Republican Party or at least go toward you.
Well, I think we're going to see, you know, and I think that's what we have to be committed to doing. If we don't stand and fight in these places that have been traditionally Democrat, not only will we eventually lose the entire country, and you could argue that we've lost it right now, and that 2022 and 2024 is going to be a Hail Mary to regain it. But also, you know, we forfeit the opportunity to even represent the truth. And that's the bigger issue. And so we're going to see where the people in my particular congressional district are. I think all across the country, different places have a varying degree of indoctrination with this liberal media and the lies that come from it. But I'm happy to be in the fight for that reason alone. I genuinely am in the fight to be able to bring a ministry of truth into a place that I know has been falsely indoctrinated with these views. And I do think that these views that they have promulgated are vulnerable in every place where they are held, because they're just not true. And so, you know, I think the Hispanic movement is a huge indicator. Many Hispanics have a traditional faith in God. And I think that the left has overplayed their hand with the Church of LGBTQ and their open promotion of anti-human policies such as abortion, especially in the way that they promote it. And there's an exodus from the Black community as well. And if we get a Hispanic and Black exodus, the Republican Party can have success far into the future.
President Biden today coming out and talking about what the Republican Party is going to do if indeed the Supreme Court rolls back Roe v. Wade, saying Republicans will, you know, go after the with the ultra MAGA agenda, as he put it, saying they'll ban LGBT children from classrooms if Roe v. Wade is overturned. This is the President of the United States talking with inflammatory, incendiary language that is utterly false. Yeah. And it's being picked up not only in our press and media, of course, but across the world. It's ignorance being churned out by a Marxist factory at 1600 Pennsylvania and a puppet president. It is just appalling, the lies that are being told to support what you're saying about having a ministry of truth. I love that expression. Because if ever,
and I don't mean their internet ministry of truth that they just installed to hopefully censor more and more conservative voices on social media. So, I would say I agree with you. And the reality is, you know, I'm not so old. So I was in school in the last 15 years, and students, first of all, what the quiet part that they don't want to say out loud is that their culture and information war at a macro level has certainly proliferated an identity crisis, you could say, or an identity phenomenon of people who identify as LGBTQ based on social incentivization. I mean, and here's how corrupt the narrative is really. They make the claim that with things such as medical information or any other what they consider right-wing extreme views can't live on the internet or in any place where people congregate, even if it's digitally, because they have the opportunity to hurt people, but they also have the opportunity to be impressionable on young minds or minds that just tend to be impressionable. Well, the same is true for the LGBTQ political movement. And nobody could deny that as the movement has expanded, we've seen a younger and younger representation of people who have these conversations now about their sexual identity or orientation that otherwise weren't happening. And TikTok is a prime example. The entire sapiosexual versus pansexual phenomenon that broke out over the past few years is completely absurd. I don't even know what the two things mean.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
And I mean, I was in school in the 2000s, and there were students who there were very few students who identified as LGBTQ, and the ones who did, sometimes they ended up being identifying that way later in life once we got out of high school. But those conversations never came up. And certainly if they did, people were pretty tolerable towards those individuals for the most part. Nobody was, and there was certainly no no kind of school and administrative persecution or singling out of those students at all. So Joe Biden's excuse there is completely unwarranted and unfounded in any type of evidence.
Here's a man in Joe Biden that he is a sad figure. First of all, he is obviously impaired. Any American who is listening and watching him understands that, and they don't have to say it. They don't have to agree with it. It's obvious to all of us that this man can't get across a stage without help. He can't come down a set of stairs without help from that stage. And when he's speaking, the odds are very, very high that he is going to be incoherent and his remarks incomplete, to say it the nicest way I can. We are in danger because of this man. And the cabal that is managing him, they have a puppet who gets lost in the White House, and they are propping him up only for their own purposes, not for the national interest, not for the national good, or his certainly. It is the most visible case of elder abuse imaginable ever. Your thoughts?
I don't trust Joe Biden as a 30-year-old senator. I mean, let's just be clear. That one of the biggest lies here that troubles me so much is, we are watching, for him to say that MAGA is the most extreme political movement in recent memory, as a person who is a part of that movement, I have to say I wear that as a badge of honor. We have had the most extreme response to a 170-year war by the Democrats to remove the sanctity of life from our society. And Democrats fought to keep slavery, and now they're fighting for the right to kill babies. And it's the exact same party. And even the 1960s Civil Rights Act, where they played like they switched sides on these human rights and civil rights issues, we now see that the proliferation of the welfare state is as damaging to the Black community as any other policy in American history. And also closely after that, the suffrage movement that now became the pro-abortion movement has also been predatory on the Black community. So when you look at the totality of the score, the facts and the findings, you see that the Democrats are exactly who they claim to be fighting. They are the party that wants to create a justification to make a human or a fetus subhuman, which gives them the right to move forward as such.
And as you're speaking about your perspective and this arena right now, we're talking about, with this court case, Roe v. Wade possibly being overturned, it turns out, rather than having been, as initially reported, a done deal. We're talking about a country that has an opportunity, in my judgment, at least, if it's turned over to give that power back to the states where it rightfully belongs, to decide for the state of what they want to do on that issue. But it also gives us nationally an opportunity to think about what we have done since 1973. And that is, we have terminated 63 million fetuses. And I believe that life begins with conception, and those are human lives that we have terminated. We have much to answer for. We have, these could all be children, productive citizens. They would be in their 40s, and some in their 50s. This is all about human potential lost to America. And instead, we have illegal immigration coming across our border, going we know not where, and disassociated from what is America and our values. So it's a very troubling time. And I can't believe that the Black community does not understand what has happened to them, what is happening to them at the border, because that is directly an assault on I believe every American who is working, who has a family. It's a disaster for this country, and all in the name of corporate needs for labor that have jobs that Americans won't do, as George Bush famously put it.
Right. Well, there's too many uniparty sellouts. And I say that specifically as it pertains to the Black community. The Black community and our community leaders, our community activists, politicians, celebrities have all become a conduit of Marxist, neoliberal, globalist politics. And one of the main culprits is the nonprofit industry that acts and serves as this hallmark for human rights and civil rights. But really, they receive their federal funding with the quid pro quo that they are in alignment with policies that are explicitly anti-human. And Planned Parenthood is no better example. You know, 60 million babies in 50 years is a genocide, 30 million of them being Black. And it's America's greatest sin, in my opinion. We have to really take this moment and come to an actualization about what we will face in the future if we don't make the right decision. It's my opinion that if this Roe v. Wade decision is overturned and we send it back to the states, it will be the single greatest thing my government has done in my entire lifetime. Because any precept of human rights and civil rights must begin with the sanctity of life. And that's a Christian idea as well as an American idea.
Yeah, and as an American idea and Christian idea, it is one that we have turned our backs on. That's the incredible thing to me, is that we have somehow turned our backs on our religion, our Judeo-Christian heritage, and the fundamental sanctity of life in America. It is the foundation of this country. We just have much to answer for. We have much to atone for. We are redeemable, but we have to take, I believe, this first step. And I just pray that the court has the courage to stand up against the attempt through this leak from the Supreme Court to the intimidation that they're all facing to, quote unquote, change their votes. Going to be a close moral battle for some of them. And I hope that evil is vanquished in this instance, especially. I want to get, if I may, to your thoughts about the country's mood right now and how that plays in Minneapolis, in your district, and what can be done to reach people who are just not listening. President Trump famously said to the Black community, "What have you got to lose?" and attracted more Black votes than anyone thought was possible for a Republican at that point, but not nearly enough, obviously.
Yeah.
Is there a way that you see for the Republican Party, or independents for that matter, to break what is a lock on that block vote that is the Black community for left-wing Democrats?
Yeah, I would say that we as Republicans have to go back into these places first and foremost. We have to represent an alternative narrative. And even when I was growing up, Republicanism was a foreign idea to me, and it allowed for the mainstream media to caricature Republicans however they wanted to. And as a young Black man, it took me to do my own independent research to find the Republican Party and understand the history of it. Now, the internet and social media certainly helped that, but there's just as much misinformation about the history of this country and our political landscape as there is truth. And actually, there's probably 10 times more lies than there is truth. So that's one thing, is that we have to physically go into these communities and represent ourselves. The other is that the Republican Party, in my opinion, also defected from Christianity and our Judeo-Christian values at some point, at least in practice, maybe not in belief or you know, let's say casual faith, because we know there are many people who say they're Christian but are not. Same with Jewish and Muslim. My opponent, in fact, Ilhan Omar, is somebody you could point to who claims that she's Muslim, but clearly doesn't demonstrate any traditional Muslim faith. You know, Republicans, we bent the knee, we folded, we capitulated on too many of these issues, And abortion was one of them, obviously, but there were many others as well, specifically around trade. And I know you were an early signaler about China and the threat of China. And that was a Republican deal, right? I mean, Nixon is the one who opened up China and took us off the gold standard. And actually, Nixon was the one who when Roe v. Wade was instituted. And so, you know, there's a lot of culpability on our side as well. We should confront that. We should repent and we should move forward with faith in God and say the best way to offset the Democrats at this juncture is to use our Christian faith as a genuine catalyst to let's say, bring a new form of charity. A Christian charity, not a federal taxpayer charity and a nonprofit to these communities, but an organic, Christ-driven, genuine care for truth and people into these communities and show people that, hey, all charity doesn't come with the quid pro quo that you become anti-human and Marxist.
Yeah. And I want to point out, Royce White is running for Congress. In Minnesota, the 5th District, Republican, conservative, populist. And I think that faith has a role here. I think also opening our eyes and minds to some realities. And that is, I'm sorry to all of those clever strategists and demographers out there, but the American people, irrespective of race or ethnicity or religion, most of us want exactly the same thing from our lives. We want opportunity. We want education. We want safety and security for our children, our families, ourselves. We're just not a very complicated people in America. We used to be far more plain spoken. We used to pride ourselves on our ingenuity, our innovation, our ability to work hard, sweat. If we fall, we pick ourselves up and we go get them again. We've become a different national people, if I put it that way, and it's commercialized, incentivized, and we have to find a way to bridge back to the reality, the essence of what this nation is and who we are.
Well, the reason I believe that's happened, Lou, is because our political class has become disconnected and disinterested in the people in a populist driven political strategy or plan or journey. Our politics are predicated on, you know, this sort of cultural elite. And that is the real fight right now. You know, on the front line, you got God versus Satan, which is the ultimate battle here and now, but in the eternal. But from a political standpoint and a geopolitical standpoint, the fight is between globalism and nationalism and the value of our citizenship, the economic value of our citizenship, but the overall value of our citizenship and the globalists that mean to undermine the value of citizenship. And those are the people that we are talking about, and you could name them. Ilhan Omar is one of them. Joe Biden's one of them. Mitch McConnell's one of them. McCarthy's one of them. I mean, Xi Jinping is one of them. Interestingly, though, I think Xi Jinping is only interested in being a globalist so far as China's at the center of of the globalists and Davos plan for the future. He's really an ethno-nationalist. But anyway, you know, I think those are the battlegrounds that we have to prepare for. And there's no way for us to explain that to people without actually going. We've kind of conceded too much ground. We've allowed the mainstream media to represent the political landscape in whatever manner they want. And many of us who know better have scoffed at it and turned our head and lived our own lives in solitude. But now the results are going to be that these ideas are going to continue to encroach on our lives, on our communities, on our children's future, and so on and so forth.
One of the reasons I cheered when you described yourself as a populist, which is what I consider myself and have done for better part of a quarter century, I've always looked at it this way. Populist means for the people. And if you're not for the people, then identify what you are for and who you're for, if it's not the people of this country. So I want everyone, Royce, I want everyone to be a populist. I really do. And the snide elites always look down at us populists and say, you know, you're just for the people. Well, the people in this case are pretty good folks, and they're a pretty good bunch to be for. We've done a lot in this country. We've created most of the world's wealth, and we've shared it with most of the world. We have saved a whole bunch of lives, and we have saved Western civilization a couple of times. We may have to come to that test again, as you suggest, with China and with Russia. But right now, we're a pretty good people, and you'd get the idea we're just horrific when you watch corporatist news and popular culture. I am so disgusted with what I watch on television. We're not a bunch of fools. I've heard a lot of people start, I'm hearing this more and more. I don't know about you, Royce, but 10% of us are the only ones who want freedom. And it's just an argument for elitism. Yeah. I know too many people who are smarter than me that I went to school with who, they didn't succeed in life financially, commercially, however you want to put it. But they're good, smart people and deserve every right that every other person in this country deserves. And, I've got great respect for everyone in this country, no matter what job they work. I was raised that way. And all the people that I grew up with were raised that way. It didn't matter what you made or what you had, as long as you were doing your part. And we respected one another on that basis. That respect is gone right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would say that deep down, most people are good. And the reason why our elites are not populist, why they are not for the people, is because they're not for people in the most general sense. They are anti-human, which stems from their anti-God, nihilism towards life. And that is a predicate for abortion as well. But we do also have to acknowledge that all of us have stood by and watched this machine kill 60 million citizens. So maybe we aren't such good people, and my point would be that, people are cultivated, politics is downstream from culture, right? And the culture from the left for a long time, and when I say left, I mean some Republicans too, the culture from the left has been to double down on the wickedness of people and try and make the claim that because people have the capacity to be wicked in any measurable quantity, then we should all dive in and get our fix while we can, because their idea of heaven has collapsed, and all that is there for them is the here and now. That's the radical materialist worldview, and they openly admit that that's who they are. Right. There is no God. There is no heaven. All there is right now, and what can I get, and what can I do for me? There's no greater selfish worldview than that of the left, and so we've incentivized people to become more wicked than they maybe otherwise would have. I think we have this next election, 2022 and 2024, these elections are not a referendum on Democrats or globalists or the radical feminists or the Church of LGBTQ or the Black bourgeoisie sellouts and BLM. This is really a referendum on the American people. And when I say the American people, I mean those of us that genuinely believe in America. And hopefully most that believe in God and believe in Judeo-Christian values. This is a referendum on us, because make no mistake about it, we let it get this way.
And this country has changed markedly in the course of the past half century. You talked about graduating from high school as President Obama was moving into the Oval Office. That was a time of hope, and it was a period of, I think, most Americans, based on the polling, they were excited about the potentialities with a Black American president and what could transpire from that. Obama, in my opinion, became the most divisive figure since Richard Nixon to take over the White House instead. He threw away a historic opportunity in with so many judgments, misjudgments that he made and decisions he took and initiatives that he followed. And then that was followed by George W. Bush, who made more mistakes. There were more calamitous decisions made, whether it be the war in Iraq. And we can follow it through to this moment in time in which we had for 4 years a man who was doing everything he said he would do, keeping his promises. We hadn't seen that since Reagan, a president who actually kept his promises to the voters in the campaigns for the office. And he's rejected because he was uncontrollable by there was no way the establishment could control him. And right. Now we're faced with precisely that decision again. And it is a question of good versus evil, as you say. Yeah. I just can't imagine having a president who says that to parents that while your kids are in school, these they belong to teachers. A president who wants to teach sex education to 5 to 9 year olds in public schools. This is an appalling and straightforward evil perspective and initiative on the part of this White House. We've never seen evil so raw and in the open and so obvious to all. Your thoughts?
Well, I think Barack Obama's presidency was a scam to begin with. It was a three-card Monte, and it used Black people. Our history in this country, our very real traumatic and tragic history in this country, to push an initiative that none of us or few of us could have possibly imagined. And that scam was that Barack Obama's being elected as president was a win in the human rights progress of America. But simultaneously, it was an attack on America. It was the beginning of an anti-American ethos. And it's completely contradictory with the truth, because aside from the history of Black people, the tragic history of Black people, our country is the only country that has God-given inalienable rights baked into, well, us in Israel, you could say as well. But the country and our founding documents say explicitly that you have been bestowed with inalienable rights by a creator, that is higher than man or government. And what Barack Obama and all of the people on his side of the football in that cultural elite, that metropolitan globalist cultural elite want is for man and government to be the highest form of authority here on earth. And so, you know, the attack was on God and the attack was on America as soon as Obama stepped foot in office. And looking back on it now, I feel taken advantage of as a young Black man at 18. I mean, there was no way to not have some level of optimism about a junior senator who kind of came out of nowhere. And even if you paid attention to politics, which most people weren't, you would have had very little information about this guy. And it is a cautionary tale for us going forward about the standard that we hold our leadership to and the authenticity we demand of our political, of our elected officials as well.
And of our corporatist media as well. I wish that more people paid greater attention to who owned what when it comes to national media, because the country's the body of public knowledge is dependent on a handful of media oligarchs in this country. We've reached that point in the show where we ask our guests to take the last word. I've enjoyed our conversation, Royce, tremendously. I thank you for taking time to be here. And if you will, the stage is yours for your concluding thoughts.
Well, thanks for having me on, Lou. I appreciate you and your audience. And I would say to continue to pray and keep hope, but follow up the hope with action. We have to restore our national honor and sacred honor. And the best way to do it is through our faith in God. I am in a dogfight with Ilhan Omar. And I definitely need people's help, because the money is infinite on their side. George Soros poured $250,000 into the DFL party. here in Minnesota, not excluding what he's given to individual candidates. So we can tell that the playing field is uneven, and the Republican Party as a whole in Minnesota had $50,000 cash on hand at the quarterly. So, you know, to everyone in your audience, whatever donation you can make would be appreciated. And our campaign website is RoyceWhite.us. My only interest in this is not to become a career politician or make some substantial living, but we're in a crisis and I want to fight for people's citizenship. So Godspeed.
Godspeed, Royce. We appreciate it. Royce White, please come back soon, if you would. And God bless you.
Anytime, brother. Thank you.
Royce White, he's a man who's unafraid of serious challenges, and he's a fellow I think we'll be hearing a lot about for some time. His website is, again, RoyceWhite.us. And our guest tomorrow is a fascinating fellow. He's a brilliant professor of astronomy at Harvard University. He is director of the Institute for Theory and Computation in the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. That's a lot to say. It also suggests to you something about his IQ. Professor Avi Loeb, he's heading up a mission to recover from the floor of the Pacific Ocean the first interstellar meteorite, or is it something else that came from another solar system to the planet Earth? Perhaps he'll discover evidence of extraterrestrials. Please join us here tomorrow. It promises to be a hoot. Till then, thanks for being with us. God bless you and God bless America.